Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hi, everybody. We want to thank our sponsor, Legion M. They are a wonderful company. We love working with them. You can go to their website, Legion M. They're also on all the various socials. They do really fun meetups. You can talk to directors. You can become a part of the projects they choose. They even have a program right now where you can help them find great movies to support. So go to their website to learn more. We also want to remind you that we have a Patreon that we call Maltreon. You can join us. We have $3, $5, $10, $20 options. You can get newsletters from my dad, all kinds of neat stuff behind the scenes. Hang out with us, learn about who our guests are before anybody else, and listen to the podcast before anybody else. Go to patreon.com/maltononmovies for more information.
That's patreon.com/maltononmovies.
Hi, everybody. I'm Leonard Maltin.
And I'm Jesse Maltin.
And you're listening to Maltin on Movies.
Today, our guest is a puppeteer, animatronic whiz. The technology that he gets into is absolutely incredible. And he creates something that we adore, which are practical effects with these very, very cool robots. And his name is Gustav Hugen. And we're so happy to be able to speak to him.
Nice to be here.
And we are talking to you from Pisa, Italy, huh?
Yes, yes. I would usually be in London, but on this occasion, I had to pop over for one day's work. So I flew in yesterday, went to the place I had to be, university, do some maintenance, and I'm flying back tomorrow.
Wow.
As you do. So, yeah, I've built a humanoid robot for them. And because they run and run and run day in, day out for research, mechanically, something does happen now and again. And I replaced the tiny component. And here
wow.
We
are. Well, to explain, what you do is you deal with animatronics and puppets to a degree. And it's incredible to see how far things have come and yeah. Kind of unbelievable at times. My dad always says it's really tough. My dad teaches a class at USC, bunch yeah. of students, which University of Southern California. And he will have to explain to the kids if he shows them something older that they're using practical effects.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because young people just like, no, it's CGI. No.
They assume everything is computer generated now.
I know, what a shame. I know, yeah. But what can you expect? You know, when I grew up, I only knew what I saw as well. So
of course.
Yeah.
My daughter couldn't believe that I didn't have iPads or iPhones. She was like, what?
How did you live?
Yeah, what? I say, no, we had cassettes, you know, and VHS.
Now, the first time I heard the term audio animatronic, that term was spoken by Walt Disney in an on-camera interview where he showed off one of the birds from what became the Enchanted Tiki Room. And this was a revolutionary thing.
It's still great. Still.
It is.
Yep. Yeah.
And this is your specialty.
I hope so. Yes. I do my best. You sometimes have a bit of an imposter syndrome, but I think everybody has it. But no, I do my best because what you see online is a very carefully composed showreel. And it leaves out all the mistakes, all the mishaps. It's like with everything in life, you know, you only want to show the highlights, but they're riddled with, you know, trip ups, mistakes, something doesn't work. Yeah, it's that's like life itself, isn't it?
But that's because you're a scientist to a degree, you know, and the things you're creating. I love at the various Comic-Cons now that you'll see R2-D2 or BB-8 yep. or one of them
roaming around. And it's amazing, much, much like with puppets. We've been lucky enough to meet some of the Muppets in person. And you look, you talk to them. You look at them.
Because
they are, you know, they are the character. And so when I see the robots go by, it's very exciting and fun.
Yeah, yeah. Well, that's one of the benefits of animatronics. I've mentioned in previous interviews, they say, you know, where does it still have a place? And I think that's exactly like you described it. And, and what works so well with hatching is to have a physical presence there, you know, something you can emote with, something you can act with and to bounce off. And animatronics is perfect for that. Not just kids, because when we did Star Wars, our team, some very clever people did BB-8.
Yeah.
Would that have been CG, you would have lost. Not to you know, put CG down. I think it's incredible. It's the most wonderful thing. But what that thing added to the overall, you know, interaction with, it was all mainly practical. And it was a sphere with half a sphere, and it could emote. It's pretty incredible.
But that's the thing, is that it's the same with, you know, when you're watching, as you say, when you watch, for me, when I watch a fight scene, when people are actually fighting, doing those stunts, that's exciting to me.
Yep.
I don't enjoy CGI fights or CGI swinging and all the rest, because it's not real.
I've learned now over the last several years where it's going is that more and more, you know, I hope that it continues, but everything is like a tool that's used to add to the story now, I think. And some films get it, you know, just say on the Star Wars, we had such a great working relationship with ILM. It was not like a competitive one. They were like, how can we help you? How can we help, you know, each other to create? So say Babu Frick, we said, we want to do a rock puppet, but you have lots of people around it in green suits. They said, don't you worry, we'll remove it. Or can you remove this stick from BB-8, et cetera, et cetera. So I think if we go that route where there's a place for practical effects, for digital effects, all to elevate the story, to elevate the film, you know, then you're on a winner, you know. And I think that's where it should be.
Yeah.
Do you consider yourself a performer?
Do I consider my, sometimes. I prefer to hand it over to professional puppeteers because it is stressful. But I have performed some of my own creations. I just make sure that I hand over a very performable piece to puppeteers, you know, especially on the bigger budget ones. You know, you build the animatronic, make sure, you know, it looks realistic, and then you put it in the hands of a professional, which is quite reassuring because they can deal with all the stress on set. I still stress as well because I'm there if anything goes wrong.
Of course.
Which I have to note is one of the most anxiety inducing times on set, basically, you know. That's the only thing I think about. I'm like this, hope nothing breaks. If it does, seen it happen, you're basically on a set that costs hundreds of thousands to run per day on big. If you think about just the cost of just hiring the stage is astronomical, then you have actors, the DOP, which are on a healthy wage, all the other crew, which are on good money, you know, that adds up. So if something breaks that they happen to shoot on, then you can hold up the shoot for 2 hours. And that, with that knowledge in the back of your head, it's not an easy thing.
It's a lot.
No, it's a lot. That's pressure.
I'm sorry. I just want to just tell people, for folks who don't know, tell people what ILM is.
ILM is Industrial Light and Magic. It's the company set up by George Lucas as the special effects department for Star Wars. And, you know, they really set the standards. And that's ILM in a nutshell. And, you know, they've been part of all the great movies like Star Wars, Jurassic Park, if I'm not wrong, the digital effects, Stan Winston, the practical dinosaurs. Yeah, they are like a powerhouse in our industry. So that pretty much sums them up in a few words. Yeah.
They're like the General Motors of special effects.
They're like the Apple of special effects.
There you go.
Better.
Pretty better. Or General Motors, as you said. Yes. Yeah.
And if you're wondering if you've seen Gustav's work or Gustav's creations, you have. If you've seen any of the recent new generation Star Wars movies, he's involved in all of them. He's also been involved in just recent years in the Clash of the Titans, The World's End,
which I love,
in Jurassic World, Fallen Kingdom, in the current film, The Hatching.
Yeah.
And which
is terrifying, by the way. Terrifying.
Great, I haven't seen it yet.
Terrifying. <Is it? laughs> Yeah, I have a 5-month-old and I'm having to watch screeners with her in my lap and periodically just turning her towards me and going, don't look, it's okay.
Really?
It's okay. It's a good thing you can't process.
I had the opportunity to watch it in Finland, but I also have 2 children, so I hardly leave. I'm either in my studio or at home. That's it. You know, my life has changed drastically.
Yeah. How old are your kids?
My son is 3. My daughter is 6.
Mm-hmm. A tender age still for absorbing some of this stuff.
It's lovely, but they control your life, basically.
Yeah. It does end. I'm 35. It does come to an end at some point. not yet.
Okay. Not yet.
No. Not yet. Not yet. One of the ones though that I have to tell you, when I was talking to my husband that told him we were going to interview you, one of his favorite movies ever is Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy.
Yeah.
And the animatronics, the puppets in that are phenomenal. So much fun. Yeah. So much fun and so cool looking. Yeah. And I think definitely one of the ones sort of like Jurassic Park, where when you think of the film, you think of those creatures.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. That was a special, in previous interviews, they asked, well, could you list your favorite jobs? And that's always one of them. It was, not only because of the work, but also because it was done at the Jim Henson's Creature Shop, which is one of the most iconic effects houses like
Absolutely.
Ireland.
Sure.
But when I still remember the first day I stepped foot in that building, you know, when you have the feeling like I'm home, this feels just right. And from there on end, it was just an absolute, I don't think I've had one bad day of work there. It was an absolute privilege and a joy, not just building the mechanical heads for the Vogels, but that building is enormous. So at lunch, I would go to the costume department where they make these fake leather jackets, you know, with really amazing techniques to create fake leather, where they made the undersuits, the sculptors. It was just like a kid in the candy shop. So no, it was a tremendous, tremendous job. But again, he did his duo. He worked with another guy, and I should have remembered, but they set up a production company. Them two were just a joy to work with, you know, absolutely like children, you know, that kind of enthusiasm they brought to the job, and they gave us such creative freedom to create these Vogons, and it really ranks as one of my favorite, especially as well when you go to rehearse. They had a whole complete hangar for the creature department. They would have set up little scenes with the Vogons. They were in that corner rehearsing with the heads, with all talking, doing lip sync, etc. It was a joy. Amazing.
Well, tell us about some of the collaborations you've had. I mean, you've worked with kind of an all-star list of directors.
Yeah.
Not all of whom are known for their work in the fantasy and science fiction realm. But people like Edgar Wright and J.A. Bayona and Terry Gilliam.
Yep, Terry Gilliam, yep.
And
Tim Burton.
And Tim Burton, that's the name.
Tim Burton, Ridley Scott. Yeah.
These are okay names, I suppose.
They're okay names.
I'll
be very honest, like you work on their film. And occasionally they'll come in the workshop, look at your work, And then you'll see them on set. And, you know, for the few days you're there, you'd be directed by them. So our working relationship is, say, not as close as, say, like director and DOP or first assistant director. But still, you gauge what they're like, what they're, you know, how their approach is towards practical effects. And that's been a very interesting journey, you know. And I would rate the people most sympathetic to our work, definitely Ridley Scott. He was the sort of guy that can helm the biggest film in the world at the time, you know. And he is so calm, and he has the best of the best working for him. But then also to create a shot, he can revert back to tying a string to a creature, pulling it into shot, and that gets the shot. And I thought that really was really telling for how he makes films. In my opinion, he is a real filmmaker. You know, he will use every tool of the box and apply it. And I think that's amazing. Instead of just going like, you know what, we'll do it in post. He will actually do it in camera. Another great one, Tim Burton, who loves tangible stuff. I remember he was in our workshop, and the guy running Charlie in the Chocolate Factory, he sort of walked away and quickly turned around and says, I really love this stuff. I love this stuff. He went on to do stop frame animation films. And yeah, he was very sympathetic to our work and happy to use it as well. So, you know, with directors, it's luck of the draw. Sometimes you get somebody who totally gets it and he fights your corner and will make it happen. And then you get very negative experiences where, you know, they will not have any of it.
Yeah.
And they'll literally tell you to leave, and it's being replaced by a digital effect. So that's the part that, you know, you don't want to talk about, but, you know, you encounter that as well. Like, you know,
of course,
the good and the bad. So, but so far, mainly positive experiences. And JJ Abrams was fantastic when it comes down to practical stuff. He was, again, you need a director who's willing to take the chance, say for the Rise of Skywalker. I'll tell you the whole evolution. When we started The Force Awakens, they said, well, there's a character, Yoda-like character, which is called Maz. You want to have a crack at it. Then they didn't know us. They didn't know our capabilities. And we presented a few things and it went digital. Throughout the process of the Star Wars, we rose, you know, in ranks, the creature department. J.J. Abrams was more and more impressed by us. And by episode 9, although it doesn't appear that much, he took the gamble and said, you know what, we're going to do Maz as a practical effect, as a CG character. And for me, that was the best conclusion ever, that, you know, it's like the reversal of roles, basically. Usually you start with a practical one, not all the time, sometimes, sorry. And they decide to replace it digitally. Now we went full circle and did it practically. So again, credit to JJ Abrams for taking the risk. But again, that was a guy that's on your side, fight your corner, and it makes the whole process a lot more rewarding, and you get a lot more confidence to try things. so yeah, more of that, please. That would be amazing.
well, JJ is a guy who started out making Super 8 films when he was a kid.
And painting models.
And painting models, you know, so he really has been there. Yeah. And sort of done every job along the way up to the very tip top of the ladder.
As you say, he appreciates your art form.
Very much so. Yes. You know? Yeah. And it showed, you know, just the freedom that was given to us. It was incredible. You know, that was unparalleled. You know, they even let us take months just to for R&D to build stuff and to try things out. Yeah, it was exceptional. Really good. Really good.
And Ridley Scott, well, there's nothing he hasn't done in the past 40 some years as a filmmaker. And so he's confident in his abilities. And so he feels that he can incorporate whatever you're doing into what he's doing.
Well, I think he just totally understands the mechanics of filming. And it's not all about doing everything in post. It's about experimenting, you know, it's about trying things. It's, you know, whatever works on camera, and you edit it in and it looks fantastic. And for me, that's a true filmmaker.
Yeah. Well, yeah, there's just no to me, there's no substitute for something being there, for something real. Again, you go back to, you know, the first Jurassic Park films, and what's terrifying is that they're real. You know, yeah. They found real dinosaurs. No, they, you know,
they found Stan Winston.
That's right.
But they found Stan, exactly.
And they look incredible, and they're still very scary.
It still holds up. Like, it's one of the few films, you know, it's again, if I have to rank the best animatronics I've ever seen, I think the T-Rex is right there. It's still absolutely astounding. And also, when you do this job, understand the complexity. Oh, sorry, it just froze it. Do you still hear me there? Or
yeah, we can hear you.
Up a bit?
We can hear
Great,
you.
Great, fantastic. Okay, so, sorry about the reception.
It's okay. It's all right.
It's a big hotel and, you know, Wi-Fi is scattered around everywhere. So. Yeah. But yeah, I think looking at that, the achievement of that is so extraordinary, especially doing this myself, to make something of that mass move so fluidly and graciously
is
absolutely incredible. I haven't personally seen anything that tops that.
I'm sure you've been asked this many times, but I can't not ask you, what films and or creatures inspired you when you were a kid?
Me? Well, I keep bringing this up, but when I was six, my dad took me to Return of the Jedi in Tuschinski Theater in Amsterdam. If you're from Holland, you go, yeah, we know that. It's like a list of buildings of one of the most beautiful Art Deco cinemas. And I would recommend anybody going to Amsterdam, go and visit Tuschinski Cinema. They also held the Weekend of Terror. I'm going off track now, but I have to mention that. That
sure.
was an annual thing that started at 1 a.m. until 8 a.m. And it was basically the latest horror films on a, like, just one after the other. And it was mayhem. People shouting, throwing. It was really good. So yeah, that's Tuschinski Theater. So my dad took me there to see Return of the Jedi. And he kept looking at the screen, and my mouth was open the whole way through. And from then on, I was like, I would love to work behind the scenes. And obviously with that came, you know, growing interest, watching more films, watching behind the scenes stuff. And my passion grew and grew. And I was just so intrigued by how people could physically make something that real. But it became a bit of an obsession, just learning a bit, reading magazines, etc., etc. So yeah, my mind was made up very early on. And then obviously I watched Alien, and that just blew my mind. And one of my all-time favorite, RoboCop. Well, it's a dubious choice, but it's just such a well put together movie. And Rob Bottin is one of my personal heroes. You know, he's on my Mount Rushmore of effects guys. Mm-hmm. Just his personality, he's completely mad, but mad genius. So yeah, RoboCop really, really inspired me. That combination, prosthetic makeup, hardware, it had everything, and a Dutch director that helps as well.
Yes. Cool. Now you might have chosen to go into stop motion, like Phil Tippett, who did RoboCop, you chose to do something where at least movement was a little easier.
Yeah.
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. Well, although I'm very inspired by Phil Tippett's work, you know,
he's
again, one of the greats as well. Yeah. So, I'm glad I chose that and not stop motion. I've done stop motion shoots, and you're very excited the first day, but by day, you can't see me, but I just pull the face, and that's basically the face you have for the rest of the shoot.
Yes. We should explain for those who don't know,
stop
motion is like, think of the original 1933 King Kong, where you move one digit of one hand a fraction of an inch and expose a frame, and then go back and move another digit another frame. It's exacting and painstaking work.
And I would say, if you guys haven't seen all of the heads that they used for Nightmare Before Christmas, you can look and see there were 30 or something little jack heads with different expressions. You can look that up. It's very cool.
But also very labor
intensive. Oh God, exhausting.
Yeah. We did that was one of my first jobs, was Lipton Brisk. You might know it in America.
Of course, yeah.
The animated cartoons. Yeah, that's what I worked on. the Bruce Lee one and the Planet Hollywood I work on.
How funny.
And those guys are a British-based company called Loose Moose, and I still think he's one of the best animators I've ever seen. He is really top-notch, really, really good work.
It's a wonderful thing to be surrounded by people that inspire you and impress you. It's a fortunate thing. As you said before, you don't always have that. So when you
do... No, you don't. And it's really nice walking down memory lane, actually. You know, I've done a few interviews before that. And, you know, I've come off a few particularly tough jobs. Sorry. That sort of makes you doubt, why am I doing this? But now, rehashing and reliving all this, it's really, it's a nice reminder why I do this. You know, yeah. There's jobs you go like, I'm never doing this again.
But of course, of course.
And why you started in it, it's nice to relive it.
Did you go to college for it? How did you begin?
I began, well, I grew up in Holland, and there is no industry to speak of in what I do. You know, they'll make some films. Obviously, Paul Verhoeven had to move to America to do big budget movies. He could not do that in Holland. So the obvious choice was to go. I thought, I'm going to America. I'm going to Hollywood. But then a producer friend of my dad who lives in Canada said, well, why doesn't he try the UK? I was like, why? But I found out later, having moved there, that all the big productions, many, many big productions are done there. Indiana Jones, Star Wars, Aliens, the list goes on and on and on. As soon as I found out and I started knocking on doors and seeing what they were doing, I was like, oh my God, I think I made the right choice here. You know, you come into a workshop and you see Pinhead from Hellraiser, right? You know, this place. I go, oh my God, one of my favorite movies of all time. And they did it. So I'm going off track again, aren't I?
No, that's fine.
So that's how I began. So I basically went to college, but I only did altogether maybe a year. And I realized that I could learn so much more just working.
Sure.
So I still finished the course, but in the meantime, I was doing a lot of work experience. And then what came a very difficult decision is like, I didn't have a penny to my name, literally nothing. I said, well, I either go to London, try my luck, or I have to move back to Holland, because I didn't have a job, didn't have money. So I just blagged my way in and said, it was a company called RTM. They do commercials, you name it. It was a great foot in the door. I said, I'll do anything you want. I'll make tea. I'll do this. And that's how it started. And it went pretty fast from there on in.
Did you apprentice with anyone?
That was my apprenticeship, RTM. Basically, I came in and you know when you're not welcome, basically, right. by the people that are there. But because I was so persistent and desperate, I was desperate. I didn't want to go back to the Holland because I was like, well, then I've sort of given up on my pursuit of my dream, so to speak. So yeah. That sort of kept me there, but it was a tough time. You know, you wake up anxious. What am I doing? What's going to happen, etc. But, you know, you sort of clasp, you know, you hold a tiny little straw, pull yourself back up, and then you start to integrate into the industry. People start to hear about you. Not necessarily that you're amazing, but just, oh yeah, maybe this guy can do that. You know, he does a bit of mechanics. Let him do it. And then the ball starts rolling. It's a gradual process. And now at the age of 45, I'm starting it all over again with my own business. You know, I've set it up a few years ago, but it's tough. So yeah, it's like starting back from square one, really. So.
What is the name of your company?
It's called Biomimic Studios. It's B for Bravo, I for Isaac, O for Oscar, M for Michael, I for Isaac, C for Charlie. Hold on, did I say that?
You got Biomimic.
I lost track there. So yeah, Biomimic Studios. And you can look it up online, and got a website there. It's got all the information you need to know, plus my showreels.
Yeah. And it's very cool to see all of the different things you've created. Now, we should talk, you mentioned it before, but the film that you are promoting right now is called Hatching. I did see it and it was terrifying. It is a horror film and it was terrifying. And the creature that you create,
that you hatch, I should say.
Yeah.
Though even the egg, did you have anything to do with the egg?
Yes, I did. Yeah. Yeah.
It's that's a fiber wild egg. Too.
That was the easy bit. Yeah.
Easy for you.
Easy for me. Yeah. That was for like a bit of a breather, you know, on the side. So yeah, I made the eggs and the hatchling creature. Everything that came after that was done by Connor O'Sullivan.
Sure.
So the contorted creature that she interacts with, yeah, that was me. Not alone, with a lot of other people.
Yeah. Sure. Yeah, of course. Sure. But
and now, well, let's ask about that. How big a crew do you have working with you on a project of that size?
Well, because of the budget, it was a fairly small crew, and it was sort of scattered into building blocks, so to speak. So start with the sculptor. He moves on. Mold maker comes in. Then I do the animatronics. Somebody to do the foams. Somebody to paint it. Somebody to do the hair. And that's it. So, and then the puppeteer. So you're looking at a, you know, say roughly 12, 13 people.
Wow.
Not more. Yeah.
And that's on the small end.
Yes, that's on the small end. Mind you, if you do a big production, you might, at the height, you might have over 100 people. And depending on when the creature is needed by, they might allocate more people to one that has priority to get it out the door quicker. But no, this was like one person per job along a timeline. Yeah, one sculptor, one mold maker. Yeah, but still a fair amount of people for one rubber monster.
Oh, sure. Absolutely. And all having to work together and having to wait on each element.
Yeah, that's the whole thing, how I planned it basically. So when one part was done, they would move on to another job, the other one comes in. So it was like a sliding door process.
Sure.
That makes sense. Yeah. That's the only way. Ideally, I would have loved to have that crew there, you know, because every change becomes a problem, basically.
Yeah.
A bit more hair. I was like, well, I can't do that. Then she has to come back in. So if you have a bigger budget, you have the luxury of having those people there standing by to right. You know. So. But yeah, but we still pulled it off in that way, you know.
Yeah.
Still a hell of a lot of money.
Yeah. Oh,
but yeah. In the greater scheme, it was a tight budget. Yeah.
Are there some actors who take to this process of acting and reacting to essentially a puppet better than others?
Do they? I think most actors take better to it than any other form of effects, really.
Sure.
I think because they're actors, they want to act and react to something.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
You know, they don't want to talk against the green screen. So you can feel there's a bit of a, you know, spark when mm-hmm. they know there's something in front of them, you know, they can interact with. And totally. All actors prefer it, I think.
Yeah. Well, I remember, as I'm sure a lot of people do, when CGI became more and more prevalent, you'd see photos behind the scenes of someone looking at a tennis ball on a stick,
yep,
you know, yep. And they're having to act to aforementioned tennis ball and stick, you know, and it's
yep.
Talk about acting, like, geez, I mean, it's a lot. But, you know, as we said at the beginning, when you see these creatures in person, you know, I mean, you know full well there's someone operating them, but you can't help it. You react to them.
That goes away, apparently. Everybody I speak to says you, even if there's like five puppeteers attached yeah. to the puppet, they say they sort of gradually disappear and all you see is the thing in front of you.
So yeah.
It definitely has an effect and maybe even brings out a better performance from the actor. So, you know, I think we're, you know, I'm not going to lie, we're still clinging on by, you know, by a string. I don't know if that's the right wording or not, but CG has definitely taken over. And in one period, especially in the mid-noughties, it became really, really scary for our industry. You know,
yeah.
We're like, this is not going to last another 10 years. And how wrong was I? You know, with currently it's the busiest period we've ever seen. It's like a golden age, you know.
Well, good.
Because of the streaming. it's fantastic. And I'm very happy. Everybody's got work, like makeup, it's through the roof.
Yes.
You name it, everybody seems to be working, you know,
yeah.
And it's thriving. Thanks to Netflix, Amazon, you name it, all the streaming giants.
Right.
They're literally, they can't build studios fast enough in Britain now. It's unbelievable. So.
Same here in Southern California.
Yeah.
I bet it is. It's such a demand. I don't know what they're planning, but, you know, it's something.
Yeah.
The takeover of the sound stages.
The numbing of our minds, baby.
That too.
They want so much content. What are they doing?
Yeah, content is a word we thoroughly enjoy. They're not making movies and TV shows. They're making content. Anyway, we won't get into it.
Yeah, we'll I don't know why busy. I said it, but that's the right terminology, isn't it?
Yeah. But hey, if it keeps everybody working, you know, that's
a good thing.
Fantastic.
That's what we want. We want everyone to work. We want everyone happy. That's the goal. But
now, have you in the course of events, have you mentored young people who are starting out wide-eyed and eager, just as you were when you began?
Yes, many, you know, it's a revolving door. There's always younger people coming in, which is great to see. And I treat them as I wish I was treated when I was that age,
of course,
with a certain amount of respect. You know, they're still dealing with people. I know that there is a bit, there used to be a bit of a habit of, like, you know, making fun of the trainee, you know, not treating them that well, etc. But I'm not a believer in that. You never know where they will be in 10 years. So I treat them all with respect. And I think it's really exciting to see them develop. Say on Star Wars, they come in all nervous and they walk away as very competent animatronic technicians or painters or sculptors. You know, I think it's a really encouraging thing. You know, some people feel threatened or are negative. I think it's wonderful. Carry on the legacy, I'd say.
I don't know if you're familiar with Fawn Davis and Funko Studios here. He's done a number of different things, and I've been lucky enough to wander around their shop.
As I
say, it's just inspiring. It's exciting and it's fun and it's inspiring, and watching people create, it's so much. It's, I say, the word fun is just, it just is, you know. And I say that as a person who's not killing myself working on these things, but
it can be fun, you know. When you're enjoying it, it's very zen like, you know. I'm like in my comfort when I'm building stuff.
Sure.
What's not so fun is the attached pressures, you know, dealing
of course,
with
clients,
deadlines,
etc. So it's a give and take, you know, and it's 50-50, I'd say. You know, there's a lot of fun, but there's also a lot of hours go in it. I don't want to put anybody off, but the hours are grueling and unforgiving. And it can upset family life sometimes, you know, because you are you're almost like at their disposal. You know, when you have to shoot, you have to go, you have to stay as long as they decide. So there's definitely to it, but then there is the other, where you can be creative, you can express yourself in that way, which is very rewarding. But like everything in life, you know, it has two sides to it. I still would recommend people, you know, I don't want to scare people away, but that's a very honest assessment of the industry.
It's the
of
truth.
Course, of course. Now, I hope you won't think this is improper to ask, but do you ever amuse your children with puppets?
No. My daughter's like, whatever. Yeah, okay. I think my son is getting there. You know, he's got all my old Star Wars toys, and he's definitely on my wavelength. I think my daughter's more interested in her friends and jewelry, makeup, you name it. So,
Well, that sounds appropriate.
That's fine, but no, it's I'm sure that as they get older and they get to be on sets and they get to watch you build, they will enjoy it.
I hope so. I hope they're impressed.
They should be impressed. Hey.
Now they don't have a clue what I'm doing. But
of course. Fine. Of course. No, I've grown up with enough folks like you, and the kids do, even if it takes a minute, the kids eventually do think it's pretty cool. And I am sure that your kids will hit that.
I hope so.
Man, thank you so much.
You sure have impressed the heck out of us.
Yeah. You're welcome.
And we wish you continued success.
Absolutely. Hatching, folks, it opens in theaters April 29th and is on VOD, video on demand, May 17th.
And you can watch all the recent Star Wars whenever you want.
Yeah, exactly.
Exactly.
You can find your Jurassic Parkses and your Star Warses and all the rest of his quite easily. And you can see Gustav's work, which is absolutely incredible.
Thank you so much for making time for us today.
Oh, thank you for taking time. Thank you so much.
Of course. It's very nice to meet you.
Likewise, guys. Thank you very much.
Sure. Take care.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Today's episode of Malton on Movies is brought to you by Legion M, the world's first fan-owned entertainment company. If you love movies as much as we do, why not own a piece of them? Find out more at www.legionm.com.